Welcome to Dig In, the podcast brought to you by Dig Insights. Each week, Jess Gedeke chats with world-class brand professionals to bring you the story behind the story of some of the most breakthrough innovations, marketing tactics, and campaigns.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Dig In podcast. I'm Jess Gedeke, and today I am joined by someone that I get some really good vibes from. It's Jordan Kustner, head of guest insights at Popeyes. And I got to say, when we first chatted, I just felt like you're super down-to-earth intellect, and I think our listeners are going to love to hear you drop some wisdom. So thanks for joining us here today.
That's a very high bar. Well, but thank you.
Okay. The bar has been set. So let's go.
Okay. Great.
No, I'd love for you to start by telling us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, it was great meeting you as well. Obviously, I go way back with some of your colleagues and happy to make your acquaintance. So I've been in insights 15 years or so, started off in consulting and on the vendor side. I was with C-Space for a number of years doing, you know, market research, online communities, qualitative and other methodologies. Moved over to Hasbro, where I led insights for global gaming. It's part of our gaming portfolio, Connect Four, Monopoly, all the games we all love play growing up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really fun. And then my family made our way to Baltimore, and I worked at McCormick for a number of years, where I led insights on global strategy. I supported our condiments business and helped support the acquisition of the Reckitt Benckiser food portfolio. So French's Mustard and Frank's Red Hot came into the fold, supported our Canadian business. Classic CPG stuff was great. And then about 3 years ago, made the move over to QSR, worked at Burger King for a number of months, and then transitioned to Popeyes, where I now lead the insights team. And Popeyes and Burger King are both under the same parent brand, RBI. So easy move.
So what haven't you done? So we've done vendor side, we've done toys, we've done CPG, we've done QSR, we've done global.
Games, Jess, no toys.
Oh,
There's a little sibling rivalry between the toy and the game side at Hasbro. I'm a game guy.
We might have to unpack that later, but thank you for that introduction and that correction. Appreciate that. So I like to get things going with an impromptu question that you don't know is coming. So here you go.
Okay.
What actor would you want to play you in a movie about your life?
Oh, wow. Harry Connick Jr.
Does he count?
I think he was on Will and Grace. I think he's funny and down to earth, and he doesn't take himself too seriously. And I'm happy that maybe he got some of those vibes from me. And people sometimes say I look a little bit like him. So I think if I that's maybe a little too self-aggrandizing. And he's a musician. I'm a musician. I vibe with Harry. I don't really listen to a lot of Harry Connick Jr., but what I've heard of him, he has a line he said once, that's all gravy, no chops. You know, which means like it's all sizzle, no steak. I like that. But it's a musical reference, which I liked.
That's great. What do you play?
Yeah. I play the guitar.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, my son's getting into guitar, and it's like, I'm like a heartbreaker. It's just, it's so cute, so cool.
Jess, can I plug my band quickly?
Please do. Please
I am
do.
The lead guitarist in the Popeyes All-Star Band, Earth, Wind, and Fryer. Yeah!
Oh my God. Nailed it. I think the interview's over. I don't think we can get any better than that. So, oh my God. Amazing. But let's dig in. As you know, our listeners really do crave inspiration from other leaders. And I think one of the best ways to inspire is to tell a story. And I absolutely love talking about these big ads that hit the Super Bowl. And I want to hear the story about The Wait Is Over, which was such a cool spot. Hopefully, let's start with you explaining the spot for those who might not have seen it, if they live under a rock and didn't see the Super Bowl. But tell us about the spot, and then how did it originate? What kind of inspired that idea?
Yeah, so a very fun project. Happy to talk about it. So the spot was an eccentric billionaire is awoken from cryogenic deep freeze, played by Ken Jeong from The Hangover and Community and other spots. And he's a very, very funny character. So he's this eccentric billionaire who froze himself because he didn't want to live in a world where there weren't perfect chicken wings. And his team of scientists wake him up and say, we've done it. We've created the perfect wing, or Popeyes, I should say, created the perfect wing. And Ken he eats it. He's like still in the tank. And he says, oh, crispy, juicy. It's great. And then he says kind of with this funny look on his face, like, well, what else has changed? And then the rest of the spot is him now 50 years removed from, I guess, his, you know, actual life, interacting with all the new things. So like drones delivering food. And he's very excited about that. He has like a massage chair. He's in a self-driving car. There's a dog that's a, I want to say a poodle and a cocker spaniel or something. Then he's like two dogs in one. I can't believe it. Funny little inside baseball. That's actually Ken's dog that he wanted to put in the spot. We were happy to
oblige.
That's
so funny. I thought he was being a little bit like he was really toying with his arms. I'm like, oh,
so So that's Ken's dog. So it's very funny. And it just kind of shows him kind of freaking out about the world around him. And it ends with him in the massage chair, singing the Popeyes jingle, love that chicken for Popeyes, but it's, you know, he's being jostled about by the chair while he's eating the wings and it's very ridiculous. So that's the spot. I can go back and tell the story. Is that what you want, Jess?
Yeah, tell me the story. Where did it originate?
Yeah, so we had an LTO in January of last year. So 23 Ghost Pepper Wings, great product, and they did extremely well for us. And we had already planned to launch a more sustained platform around wings in the end of the year, end of 23. And we started to pull some of that a little closer in, given the enthusiasm we had around the wings. It was just a great opportunity to kind of continue to keep our foot on the pedal. And we did that. So we launched a second single LTO sauce like middle of the year, and then launched the platform, I want to say the end of October, which is a five flavor, at the time was five flavors, and we're expanding that as we speak. And so a lot of, we had a big plan to support that, and then given the enthusiasm, the excitement, and then we realized, given the need to kind of educate people that Popeyes has wings, I think that was kind of the big outage. Or I shouldn't say outage, the challenge we were facing, right? We're known for a great brand and a great product. And obviously the chicken sandwich a couple of years ago kind of changed the complexion of QSR. Everybody has a chicken sandwich now. You're welcome, America. And still come to Popeyes because we're the best, obviously. But we needed to kind of now, you know, change the game. So now we're moving into and kind of trying to take over the wing space as well. And to be perfectly honest, this is not me even like shilling for the brand, but I love the wings. I think they're a really, really solid product. Great flavor, great, you know, protein, great meat itself. It's just really high quality. It's excellent. So we need people to know about it. And so what better way than to hit all those eyeballs at once and do it in a really fun, exciting, memorable way. And luckily, A, it's a message that kind of lends itself to a little bit of that silliness. I mean, here it was, a lot of the different scripts we looked at were kind of like jokingly talking about how could it be that we waited this long to have wings? And that's kind of where a little bit of the idea came from. And it's a very simple message. You know, sometimes a brand, you think about some of the other brands that have had, you know, bad campaigns over the Super Bowl, they have too much they're trying to say. And it's such a busy time of year, so much really, really engaging creative. We had a very simple message. We have wings, period. And the goal was for everybody to come and try them. And so I think it was a really great opportunity to kind of do something bold and exciting. And it was A, new for Popeyes to have the wings in a consistent way. We've had the LTO. And it was our first Super Bowl spot. And we were really excited about that. And, you know, lastly, I'll say Ken had New Orleans roots, which really was, I don't know if it was something we considered, but he was really excited. He went to medical school in Tulane. When he gave the, you know, the address years later as the, you know, honorary doctorate recipient, his rider demanded that he have Popeyes in his you know, green room. So he was he's a passionate Popeyes fan, which just made it all the better. He was really excited about it. He went on Jimmy Fallon a week before the Super Bowl and he teased the Super Bowl ad. Usually celebrities are teasing the new project, the new TV show, whatever. Yeah. He was teasing our ad because he was really excited about it. And he's proud of the work. And I think it was a great experience for me to be part of it. My first Super Bowl spot as well. And in terms of measurement, you know, it's a little bit hard. You know, obviously sales were really positive. We're happy about that. But it's also did this hit the mark? Is it memorable? And we were ranked among the top 10 Super Bowl ads by a number of different, you know, third party independent outlets.
Our first time there too.
Huge win. And great credit to the team, credit to our agency, McKinney, credit to everybody who really stepped it up.
Yeah. Was there any time along the way of that development where something went wrong and you had to pivot, you had to sort of like start over? I mean, what went wrong?
What went wrong? Well, I don't know if anything went wrong, but we had a lot of really, really good ideas. And again, credit to the agency. So I think everybody had their personal favorites going in. And I think we wanted to make sure that we were guest insight led in our selection for that path and in how we optimized those scripts before we open camera, because that's where, and when you hire the celebrity and partner with them. So there's a lot of moving pieces before that happens. I don't want to say it was, and maybe the challenge, and maybe this is answering your question a different way, is we needed to kind of figure out a new process for developing creative, because the way we measure, the way we validate Super Bowl creative is very different than the typical spot. You know, in the typical spot, you're trying to understand, hey, did this message come through? Is the branding right? Do people remember what the price point is? Hey, maybe change the VO here. In a Super Bowl spot, you're hiring a different type of director. In our case, I can't remember. I believe he had recently shot a very successful music video. So it's like a very different, you know, style director. And we're giving him and the agency a lot of creative license. And you don't want to get back feedback that's hyper tactical or going to be disruptive to the flow. And we also hadn't done a ton of this being our first Super Bowl spot. We've done a lot of pre-flight or pre-copy testing, you know, qual, but this is a very different animal. You're talking to people. And one of the big questions, I mean, you know, is, do you like this ad, or do you just like that Ken Jeong is in it? And mm-hmm. and if we don't get him, we haven't negotiated with him yet, does the whole thing fall apart? So there's a lot of really interesting nuances. So we had to onboard a different partner for the qual that we hadn't used previously, someone who had experience in a strategic capacity working on Super Bowl creative, working with agencies. We used we supplemented our normal copy testing protocol and had another methodology kind of running side by side to make sure that we were super informed. And so that was a little bit chaotic for me. I don't think anybody else got to experience it. My recollection was I was on vacation with my family. I think I was on a boat somewhere trying to onboard new vendors to our, you know, AP system. But it all worked great, and we had the right partners in place, and obviously the results speak for themselves. So
yeah, that's excellent. And there's so many things in there, but two points I'd love to kind of highlight is, one is, especially with creative, everyone has their favorites, right? It's just the nature of art. You like it or you don't, and it doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just that we perceive things differently as human beings. So that sort of opportunity to park the internal biases or our favorites and really let objectivity speak has got to be so important for something as strategic and investment as a Super Bowl ad. So it sounds like you were effectively able to do that, sort of park the bias.
I think everybody has, in this case, has multiple biases, right? One is, oh, this one is the funniest, mm-hmm. or this one is it's maybe not the funniest, but it's going to do the best for our business. Or this one is probably the easiest to produce, and this one is probably the least expensive. And I think we're all kind of balancing all of those things. And in the end, the insights really helped us to determine the best path that kind of checked all the boxes, was going to do the best, have the biggest impact on our business, was going to have the story that kind of held together to ensure that the message resonated. I think in the end, we all were, you know, all the biases put aside, we all realized we had the right execution, was going to do everything we needed it to do. Yeah. So
so important. And then I think the other piece is this notion of, to be at a Super Bowl, be on that stage, it's got to be disruptive. But how many times have we seen ads that are disruptive? They're wacky, they're crazy, but they really don't help the brand. So I'm just curious how you guys thought about the impact in terms of driving sales in the short term and how the broader brand building is an outcome that you wanted to see. How did you think about those two things?
Yeah, so I would say two things come to mind. One is Popeyes has a number of very distinctive brand assets. Obviously the jingle's big, the Popeyes orange, the food shots are, you know, iconic. So all of that, we wanted to be in the spot. We kind of knew it would be. And in fact, the jingle at the end that Ken sings, I think that wasn't even in the script. I think he improvised that.
I mean,
it was in the script in another way. So we knew it was going to be in there. So like, I think all those distinctive assets, and that's why you get someone like Ken to be on set, because magic happens. So I think distinctive brands assets is part of it. And then I think the previous year, let me take a step back. Before we did all of this, once we decided, hey, we're going to do this, and we sold it into leadership, and again, had to find the budget to make it happen because it wasn't really in the plan. I said, there's an opportunity for us to kind of get smart on Super Bowl creative generally. And so I reached out to a number of our partners who did meta analyses for us on what worked and didn't work from the previous year, what makes a good Super Bowl spot. And one of the things that came to mind, one of the learnings we had, was around how you kind of have to have a celebrity. Fine, everyone knows that, but you can do it really, really poorly and it be a disaster. And I think our benefit was, I think if I remember correctly, 22, which was the prior year, or 23, I'm all confused. The prior year, there were a number of spots with like really popular celebrities that just didn't have that fit. I think there was one, as I recall, it was like an auto ad with Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell, and this is to my previous point, if you put Will Ferrell in an ad, it always scores well because people like Will Ferrell. He's hilarious. But if you actually look at the data, I think a lot of people saw the ad and just were kind of distracted by Will and didn't understand why he was in the spot and what it had to do with this message. It may have been Volkswagen, if I remember. And so you're getting some engagement, but it's not the kind of engagement you want. And I think we kind of heard that loud and clear, knew we needed to make a splash. And I think almost all of the spots we looked at, there might've been one exception, was had a celebrity kind of helping us as a catalyst, but it needed to be in support of a message that made sense with the story. It made sense with this person or this actor. And some of the spots we looked at were, you know, celebrities as themselves. And in the case was Ken as this character, which again is a great way for Ken to come to life. And also kind of disconnects, you know, unless Ken is someone who we now know has a strong bond and connection with Popeyes, I don't want Ken Jeong talking about the wing. I want Ken to play an amazing, hilarious character that is so excited about the wing, because that's how people really connect with Ken. I think that was some of the learning we had leading into the execution.
Yeah. So can you introduce me to Ken for the podcast, Asking for a Friend? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I'm sure you get that sure. asked all the time. Why not? Oh my God. Yeah. How funny.
You, me, and Ken and Joel McHale, who wouldn't watch just that?
Shooting the shit. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's make it happen. Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that listeners love to hear, especially when you're on the front lines of some of that development of huge creative. And I found it hilarious and hopefully even more impactful for the brand for sure. So let's turn to you now as a thought leader. You are a leader in your organization and in our industry. And I'm just curious if you could talk to us a little bit about one of your more passionate points of view, which is we've chatted about, is kind of the interaction and the role of insights and marketing within an organization. So I know that this is very relevant to a lot of our listeners. Like, how do you navigate some of that structure and collaboration? What challenges do you face, and sort of what do you see as some of the successes?
Yeah, and super important, given prior to my tenure at Popeyes, there was no formal insights team. It was a little bit, everyone kind of did their own thing, and we were always insights led, but we didn't have a formal structure or team around that. So I thought a long and hard about how to kind of build this team and what we wanted to stand for. And I think one of the things that I learned at McCormick certainly was the importance of being a business consultant and an objective voice of your consumer in the office, right? So what you always want to have is to have your consumer, your guest in our parlance, have a seat at the table. And myself and my team, we're the ones who kind of bring that. We're merely the conduit to those insights to ensure that we're using the data that we have and the insights to drive our business, to inform our strategy or to build our strategy. And I think it's too easy for insights people to kind of get caught up in the researchy side of what we do versus the consultative side of what we do. And I said this recently at TMRE, where I was sitting on a panel with a very, very smart gentleman from IBM who's very, very data heavy. And I made some comment about how like anybody can run a survey. And of course, this is like sacrilege in our business. And certainly someone like you, it's sacrilege. And what I mean is there are tools and there are vendors like you and your team that we can lean on for support in those respects. But the element and the part that I'm supposed to bring to the table is having a deep understanding of our business, having a deep understanding of our 3 to 5 year strategy, understanding what the objectives are of my particular team in this particular instance, connecting those dots, and then helping to take those data and the insights that we collect in partnership with you or others and bring it to life in a story-driven way so that everybody can wrap their head around it and actually action against it. And I think it's too easy for insights people to be really excited about all the learning, but never really drive to that final action. And to get too caught up in the process and not recognize that our role is to kind of be those business consultants. So I think that's kind of the first piece in the way my team tries to orient ourselves. And to that extent, we've embedded ourselves into the marketing team, the category team, to ensure that we're partnering with those folks from day one or day zero, even on a project or a white space exploration. And then identifying areas where we can enhance the strategy, enhance the perspective, whether those are business questions or consumer questions, and then build that plan to kind of go along with the work that they're doing. And I think the second piece is tied to that, which is building those alliances with our marketing peers and other cross-functional partners. It's easy for me to think that insights are important. I mean, it pays the bills, but what I really need are my peers and my and have other people within the organization advocating for myself and my team and what we do and demanding that we continue to kind of have that seat at the table. And luckily, I am in an organization where that is not a problem. You know, luckily, I work with people who want to partner with Insight, who believe in the power of Insight, who want to have guest insight driven strategies. And, you know, the learning for me, and I guess the advice for all of our listeners today is, you know, and this is for me, so I don't want to, you know, throw this at anybody else, but like, I don't want to work somewhere where I have to convince them that they need to have an insights team. Like that's not what happened. Popeyes was, you know, jazzed about it, to use some New Orleans language. But, you know, I'm happy to be in a place where we need to kind of, you know, advance the agenda and evolve the team. But on a fundamental level, you need to kind of be invested in this, in the premise. And I know for my peers and other contacts and colleagues, that's not always the case. A lot of times there are organizations where insight's a little bit of like a rubber stamp to keep somebody happy or to make this Wall Street think that we care. But really, it's a sales-driven organization, let's just say. Yeah. And so for me, as I think about, you know, my career, I'm very happy at Popeyes, which is great news. But I think the learnings also is making sure that I continue to be in an organization that values that and puts insight first. And then I can grab that baton and take it to the next level, but not really interested in convincing you I need to exist.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've both been in the industry now, whatever, a couple decades, which is terrifying to think of sometimes. But, you know, I think that the role of insights has evolved, where we used to be just the people that delivered data. And now, thank goodness, we're asked to bring a more strategic mindset. So what do we actually do with the data? How does that impact different decision making? And more importantly, how can we translate that into information and decision points that our different stakeholders can make? So not just marketing, but finance and supply chain. And oh my gosh, you have so much from franchisees and all these things. Like, there's so many different stakeholders to the information. So as insights professionals, I think that we're almost forced to be very multidisciplinary, right? Where we have to be able to put on all those hats. And I think that it's a challenge our industry by and large has taken on wholeheartedly, but we absolutely, especially at DIG, believe, you know, data does not equal decisions. You need to ensure that it has actionability. Otherwise, what's the point of the insights function? So
yeah, 100%. Yeah. Actionability is key. And the one thing I would add is, you know, you talked about the evolution of going from like data delivery to being insights partners. I think we're not really there yet, but as AI becomes more prevalent, I think it's only going to up the demand for the insights people to be adding something strategic on top of that. There's no more need for me to crunch the numbers or to do these, you know, analyses on large sets of qualitative whatever. That's all done for us now, or soon to be done. So where do I add value? How do I continue to kind of enhance those projects? And I think it's continuing to kind of move along that curve and being strategic and consultative.
Yeah. And so what's your kind of quick take on that, Jordan? Because this idea of AI, it is really going to drastically change our industry. It already is. But what are some of the characteristics or qualities you think that insights people really need to embrace and embody in order to make the most out of this next chapter?
Yeah, I think it's about continuing to be really curious. I think that's a part of this equation that AI is not going to be able to solve for us, the human curiosity and continuing to kind of always push a little bit further, you know. And I'm no scientist. I don't know how it all works, but it's all rather impressive. I use it a lot in my personal life just to write like gag emails to my family, and it's spot on. It's really great. But it's still drawing on something that exists. And so what's the next thing? Where's the white space? Why are people behaving a certain way? And so even if the AI can kind of pull it all together and tell me a story, it's not going to get me the true human emotional underpinnings of what's happening. So I think we have to continue to, you know, strive to kind of add that beyond the strategic and the business overlay that we're going to be adding, and the partnership and the storytelling. And to talk about actionability, I think, you know, what my boss always says, you know, we are not running a university here. This is not just learning for learning's sake. He said that to me once and it stuck with me. It's just, it's so true. Like, and, yeah. And I'm a curious person. I like to read, I like to learn new things. I like to have, you know, I have varied interests, but when we're at the office, the goal is to drive change and to drive growth. And yeah. So you gotta, that's a part of this equation. I don't think AI is going to do for us. And if they do, it's Terminator 2 and we're all dead. So hopefully we still have a role here.
Amazing. We're definitely keeping that clip in there. What's your hot take on the future of the QSR industry? A lot's going on.
Oh my gosh. Lots going on. I don't want to opine on our competitors. I know there's a lot of really exciting stuff for Popeyes coming along. Can't share too much, but obviously we're really excited about wings. A lot of really exciting things there. Some cool stuff happening with sandwich this year. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. That's a little bit outside of my pay grade to break the news, but we're very excited about what's going on. And listen, you know, we've been part of kind of a really exciting time for QSR. Like the sandwich in 2019 and 2020 changed how QSR kind of looks and feels to our guests every day. And Popeyes is answering the call. And, you know, we kind of started that craze, but we're kind of continuing to keep our pedal on the metal, as I said before, and kind of continue to drive to change and continue to enhance the experience for our guests. So we're excited about that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep our eyes out for the news that you cannot drop, but it sounds like there is a lot in the hopper there. So let's get into the final dig. This is all about you as a consumer, as a person, as a human being. And so feel free to take off your professional hat. Although I think you're one of those people that there's not two different versions of Jordan. I think we're probably getting the real deal, but you know, so just answer these as you would. What's the last product or service you bought on impulse?
The last product or service I bought on impulse. Oh my gosh. Yikes. It's very like niche. I bought a new, there was a very dangerous hockey accident recently. A player actually died on the ice. They got slashed. Oh. And I met this young man, shouldn't say, probably early 20s, who developed a undergarment for hockey that has a neck protector built into like the cold gear that you wear underneath your gear. Oh. I play hockey. I should mention that. Otherwise it's a very strange thing.
Otherwise, yeah.
They're very impulsive. So that was, and I thought it was really cool. It was like entrepreneurial. He was just another player who kind of saw this opportunity and people were buying these like one pieces, but no one wears them. So having it built in, I thought was really, really clever. And so kudos to him.
Good. Yeah. And increasing safety.
Yes.
I love the comment. Really impulsive. I don't play hockey. That was Okay. How about a category or a brand or a product that you could rationalize any price point for? You just have to have it in your life.
Oh my gosh. Cetaphil. It's like a face cleanser. Sure. If I people always say, if I'm on a desert island, what's the one thing I need to wash my face? I just feel very out of sorts and not ready for the world. I have like a little emergency bottle that I keep in my laptop bag, so it's always right near me. You say any price. I do get a little bit price sensitive. So if I see a good price, I'll buy like the entire shelf. Mm-hmm. And I always imagine a day when they go out of business or who knows what happens. And then what am I going to have to find a new face wash? Like, I can't even imagine. I don't want to do that. So please, whoever you are, Cetaphil people, keep doing that.
They're definitely listening. And I love the mention of the desert island. I always joke with my husband about that because we're like obsessed in our family with lip balm. We're just one of those families that always has to have it. And whenever we watch those survival shows and they're like, I brought a machete, I brought a fire starter, I'm like, lip balm, 100%. Yeah. That would be my survival item.
Yeah, I would be starving, but I would look great.
Well, again, this isn't vanity. This is hydration. This is like a hydration issue. Love this one. I can't wait to hear how you answer it. Brands have distinct personalities, as we know. So what's a brand that you would love to date? And what's a brand that you would love to marry? They don't always have to be the same brand. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I would marry Apple. I love being in their store. It's just, it's all so neat and tidy. A brand I would date, Red Bull. I had the opportunity to attend F1, the Red Bull team. I got to tour the pit with them. It was exciting. It was fast. It was loud, but it was so technical. And I was so impressed by everything they're doing. And then you think about how expansive that brand is, obviously the product, but how they've owned the X Games and Felix Baumgartner like flew up to the moon and jumped off of it or something. And I was on the edge of my seat watching that. It was so insane. Like I, when you say date, like maybe for like a minute, I think I would right. tap out real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. So that'd be a lot to keep up with, but also just somewhat unpredictable, where maybe you would need a little more stability and the cleanliness of Apple. It's a good dichotomy there.
Right. Like you want to go to Vegas for a couple of days. You don't want to live in Vegas. No offense to people who live in Vegas, but I feel like that's the Red Bull equation. It's like, am I also, it's not really fair. When I think about Vegas, I don't think about Henderson, Nevada. I think about like the Strip and like, God knows what's happening there. It's great for like 48 hours, but no one lives there, I guess.
I think you're worrying too much about what the Vegas residents are going to think. I think it's
the Vegas lobby is going to come after me. By the way, the Vegas lobby is like Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro, and I don't need them knocking on my door tonight.
Well, I think we talked around the Super Bowl. You know, my last trip to Vegas was one of sadness and despair. So, but
I know the feeling. And but listen, what I said to you is you have to enjoy. I've been to a couple losses myself. I'm a Patriots fan. I shouldn't complain. But neither should 49ers fans, okay? But you got to go and enjoy the experience and just be happy to be there. And next year, if either of our teams are going to be in the Super Bowl again, it's not going to be me. It'll be the Niners. So enjoy.
Thank you. That gave me a little bit of wind in my sails. So finally, just to wrap us up, what keeps you inspired at work?
What keeps me inspired at work? I love my brand. I love Popeyes. You know, I was thinking about the old Hair Club for Men president. I'm not just the president. I'm also a client. I was a Popeye super fan before I got the job. And when I interviewed at Burger King, I jokingly said, this is all just a ruse to get me one step closer to the culinary team at Popeyes. And it all came true. So I love the brand. I love what we do. I love the product, but I also love my team. We have very like fun. It's a fun, energetic, fast-paced category and a fun, energetic, fast-paced team that I work with. I don't think I realized how much I liked being in that type of environment, particularly being at a fast-paced org. You know, CPG tends to be a little more conservative, a little slower paced, and that was fine when I was there. But Popeyes has kind of really changed a lot of the dynamics for me and how I work, and it's been really fun. And my office is in Miami; can't beat that. You know, every time I step in there, it's like a little bit of a party, so it's great.
That's fantastic. So pleased that you could join us today. If you could just close us out with a quick jingle, I'd like to hear it from you.
Oh my gosh. But my mom was here and she's in the other room. She would remind everyone that I failed miserably at ear training. I studied music in college and singing is not my jam, but love that chicken from Popeyes.
That was so Harry Connick Jr. Seriously.
I'm going to get sued. I think I'm going to get sued for doing that, but here you are.
I love how many boundaries we've pushed in this short conversation, but thank you so much for joining us. I know that our listeners loved it. I feel like I could talk to you for hours. Thank you for giving us some of your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Until next time, guys. Thanks for joining.
Like what you heard? Share the inspiration or head to diginsights.com to learn more about what we do.